Joining us on the summit today is barrister at law from Tasmania in Australia, Raymond Broomhall. Raymond, welcome to the summit.
Thank you for having me, Josh. It's a pleasure.
Now, I'm so excited about this interview. It's actually, we're doing this in two parts. The content you are bringing is tremendous and empowering for people and really revelatory, because you have created and have implemented a legal process in Australia, right, and Tasmania and other, and that can be done in other countries, that has resulted in hundreds of small cell sites and 5G installations being either prevented or removed. Is that correct?
I'd say thousands, not hundreds, yes.
Okay, excellent. Okay, I just wanted to understate it, because I don't want to overstate anything. I want to, you know, really just be clear and be, because this is really, really big news. So this is a huge part of the summit, is this process. I'm so glad to be able to, first of all, in part one, we're going to talk about the results. We're going to talk about the theory. We're going to talk about the applicability and surrounding conversation about this process. And in part two, we actually are going to dive in 22 step-by-step points. Ray's prepared a three-page document. We're going to go through step-by-step how you do this legal process. So, let's dive in. Ray, I'm gonna just read your bio, so to give the audience a bit of a background on you, and then I'll stop talking, and then you can talk. How's that?
Sounds great.
Okay.
So, as we say,
go ahead.
As we say in Australia, she'll be right, mate.
She'll be right, mate. We were just talking about that before the call. Anyway, I need to go to Australia and New Zealand. It's definitely on my bucket list. So Raymond Broomhall is a licensed and practicing barrister in Australia and Tasmania, and he's getting results dealing with 5G and stopping it, which is what we're going to get into. And Ray specializes in out-of-the-box legal approaches. He is in very high demand throughout the world for his work on specifically on electromagnetic radiation issues and small cell installations and getting results there. It is considered to be one of the leading legal advocates in this field. So, Ray, tell us about the results before we get into kind of the theory and overview, and then in part two, you know, as mentioned, we'll do step-by-step walkthrough. Tell us about the results you're getting with this legal process.
Well, it's been a bit of a journey, and that I guess the penny dropped when I realised that the best approach to it. And the beautiful thing that I've realised is that a lot of my work doesn't require actually going to court. The telcos have started to realise that it's in the too hard basket for them. They don't want to air their dirty laundry in court, and they decide to withdraw quite quickly. The success I've had, I guess, would be, I'll start with, where do I start? Probably Wilson's Creek, which was in New South Wales, which is a state of Australia. And in New South Wales, it was an issue that we had with a telco who was building a tower. We put together a process where we talked about the criminal side of things and also the precautionary principle issues, armed the council with the correct tools so that they could reject the development without having to have it appealed. And we were successful with that and stopped the tower. And that's when the floodgates started opening. And we realised that a medical certificate was extremely important. And then went to another issue where I had eight doctors in a street who were having small cell 5G placed on a power pole, basically next door to a child's bedroom on the street. There were eight doctors on that street, and they decided that they needed to engage me to assist. And not at that time, I was also working with another 30 different organisations and communities around Australia with this particular network and this telco provider. So in essence, we were taking on the entire network with this telco provider. Now, this telco provider already had 900 small cell facilities already established, which basically means they're already placed on poles throughout Australia, and they had another 1,600 that they were going to put through. So they'll propose. So all up, we're looking at it in that particular one network was 2,500 small cell facilities.
Okay, so 2,500 small cell facilities, 900 are already installed, and then another 1,600 are planned. And this is what, nationwide across Australia?
That's
or just
right.
in one
That's
state?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they'd already spent around $130 million on the network. And it's basically the best thing is I put everything together, joined forces with the doctors, got an expert medical opinion to come forward, and then we had the telco actually attend a public consultation meeting. And we absolutely floored them at the meeting. We also encouraged council to attend, which they did, and also local government members of local government. And it got to the point where we were very successful with that, and they pulled the pin on it, yes.
Wow. Now, just on the timeline here, help us to establish when was that process started and when did you have that the result?
Okay, well, it's basically in August, and we had the result in January. So
of 2018, and then the result in January of 2019?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, excellent. And so, I mean, that's significant. Have you heard of anyone else in the world really doing a process like this that has actually not only stopped but reversed small cell and 5G towers?
Not that I know of, no. As far as I can see, I'm probably the only person that's been doing this. I do have some counsel that assist me and other lawyers, so I do have a small network and a small team that are with me on this. It's been interesting.
Now, you're licensed as a barrister at law in Tasmania and Australia, correct?
Yeah, so Tasmania is part of Australia. So in Australia, we have seven states and territories. So I can practice in pretty much anywhere I want to in Australia, yes.
Okay, now you're going to be teaching us a process that is it directly applicable? Can it be used in other Western countries? Tell us about its international applicability first, before we kind of dive into how it works.
Yes. The way I see it is that it's actually very simple and very common sense. And when your viewers listen to it, they'll actually understand that it should be applicable pretty much worldwide, I would think, yes.
Okay. And just to the viewer out there, in part two, we're walking through, as mentioned, but we're making the document templates and guides, everything as a free included downloadable. So stay tuned for part two. So let's dive into how this works, Ray. Just give us, you know, not the step-by-step, you know, the level of detail, but the theory. How have you developed, and what do you use in your legal action that's resulted so far in this very significant level of success?
I guess the best way to explain it is it's all about putting the telcos, not only the telcos, but also councils, also members of parliament, any decision maker on notice that this thing is, that electromagnetic, non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation is actually, has a potential risk of harm. And to establish the evidence for that, so as that anything that, when an objection's put into a telco, that there is enough, there is expert evidence that backs up that claim. So in essence, getting a medical doctor or medical practitioner to have a look at the science, realise that yes, they're saying that there's no established health effects out there. Well, I've turned that around and said, well, non-established health effects. Okay, well, that means that there's no scientific certainty as to whether or not it's safe or it actually causes harm. There are thousands of studies out there that indicate that it is actual harmful. So therefore, the precautionary principle kicks in, which basically means when there is scientific uncertainty, then you must err on the on caution. And so what I've done is in effect got medical practitioners to assess the science, and it's up to them to come up whether or not they believe that it's harmful or not, or it's got a risk of harm. Now, once my client has received this medical advice, then their fear of this particular electromagnetic radiation being emitted onto them from their neighbour, which is a telco, is enough to start criminal action in a court. Because, and I can explain that later, but that's basically the principle. So, in essence, we use the precautionary principle. We circumvent federal law, where they try and use telecommunications acts and federal standards, such as in Australia we call it the APANSA. In the US, I think they call it the FCC. Or FCCC, or whatever it's called. And basically what it is I've worked around that and realised that the trick is to bypass all that and go straight to the criminal code to assist. And then we apply for restraint orders or threaten to apply restraint orders. And that's enough to, when they realise that not only the telco but their employees, that anybody that's in the decision-making process, including councillors in councils, anyone that's agreeing and allowing an assault to actually occur against my client, is enough to instigate restraint against them in a court of law.
Wow, that's excellent. So you're using the medical system and the authority that the legal system holds, that the medical system holds, in other words, like the authority that the legal system recognizes when the doctor writes a note with regards to the health and or well-being and or mental or physical state and risk of harm their patient, then that carries legal power and weight, yeah?
Exactly, because who's responsible for health? Is it a scientist or is it a doctor? It's as simple as that.
Even the agencies don't even have proper scientists. They're mostly just engineers, but please continue.
That's correct. Or there's psychologists who don't have medical training. There's all sorts of things. And the issue is that really in our society, a doctor's opinion, that's why they're doctors, that's why they're medical practitioners. It's up to them to disseminate what's out there and to diagnose their own particular patient and to assess the risk of and assess what's best for their patient. And that's the trick. That's it.
Wow. And so what are you finding in terms of the number of doctors that are sort of willing to, once they are apprised or educated on the science, like, are doctors responsive to, you know, writing letters like this for their clients?
Yes, very much so. And once people realise that, see, the whole issue is when if we go to court, it's got nothing to do with how the doctor assessed this, okay? It comes down to how the patient sees whether or not that their fear of electromagnetic radiation is true or not, or if they're established a reasonable fear inside themselves that this is going to harm. I don't have to explain how a doctor came to that conclusion in court at all. That's the beautiful thing about it. All I have to do is say, a doctor's given an opinion, my client has established a reasonable fear backed up by that expert opinion that this is going to harm them. That's all I need. I don't have to go into the science. And the worst thing is, I learnt that a long time ago, was that if I had experts about engineers and physicists and everybody in court, there was always a counter argument raised by the other side. And what I've done here is completely remove that.
Yeah, because it's not like the other side, so to speak, can easily have a doctor write a note about that individual, you know, without, I mean, it's basically like you're trumping so to speak, their defense completely by...
Completely throwing it out of the window. And that once doctors understand this and realize that they do have the freedom to diagnose and treat, etc., and all it is I'm saying, is this particular person... all I'm asking the doctors, is this safe? Well, not me, but my client is going and consulting their doctor and saying, excuse me, doctor, they're going to start putting this tower right next to my house, or they're going to put a smart meter in, or whatever, a 5G small cell facility, whatever it might be. Excuse me, doctor, can you please tell me, can you look at the science, please, and tell me if it's safe?
Yeah. So, and on the legal side, tell us about, now you send notices.
Yes.
And tell us about how you use and invoke criminal law and how the legal side of the process works.
Okay. Well, how it works is that in anything in law, you always have to put the other side on notice so that they are under, it's all about consent. And what you're doing, in a sense, is you're withdrawing your consent to be irradiated by electromagnetic radiation. Now, the criminal code, for example, and I'll just use... a good example of a definition of assault, so as you understand what that means, and then you'll understand, it will sort of make sense. But in Queensland, I'll just use this particular state because each state's different, and you'll find that in Australia we have a slightly different context as to what assault is, and you'll find the same thing in the UK, US, etc. But assault is really the principle that we're working on here. And I'll just read this to you. And this is the Queensland Criminal Code, Section 245. And it says, definition of assault. A person who strikes, touches, or moves, or otherwise applies force of any kind to the person of another, either directly or indirectly, without the other person's consent, or with the other person's consent if the consent is obtained by fraud, or by any bodily act or gesture, attempts or threatens to apply force of any kind to the person of another without the other person's consent, under such circumstances that the person making the attempt or threat has actually or apparently a present ability to affect the person's purpose, is said to assault that other person, and the act is called assault. Now, when I refer to the applies force issue, applies force includes the case of applying heat, light, electrical force, gas, odour, or any other substance or thing, whatever if applied, in such a degree as to cause injury or personal discomfort.
Mm. Now, so interesting how both electrical force and injury and personal discomfort, which probably includes fear, right? Both of those.
That's correct. Yeah, so you can have injury in the form of anxiety in some form, or you could have it in the form of personal discomfort. And that's all I'm doing, is I'm just addressing the personal discomfort issue, if that makes sense.
Now, this is just to back up, this is the criminal, the definition of
assault.
Legal assault used within the criminal legal sphere.
Yeah, and the reason I use that particular section in the Queensland Code is because Queensland is probably the most codified in all states in Australia, and you'll find that codification means that it's got all the common law in everything. Basically, all the common law since time and memoria has been developed to form this particular definition of assault, and you'll find that would probably apply pretty much worldwide. Okay.
Now, common law is still active in the United States, right? Because there are some people who says it's no longer.
Yes, and common law is just basically case law. So when a Supreme Court case is handed down and they interpret a certain legislation or a particular act, their interpretation becomes case law. Common law, as we say.
Okay. I quickly want to ask you, before we dive into the next layer of understanding, you're using notices, you're using common law. Many of our viewers will know that in 2017, I helped to bring forward an organization called In Power Movement, doing a
notice of
liability process, using common law, using notices, and using commerce, and have since entrusted that organization to my co-founding partner, Cal Washington, and the board. Really quickly, what's your perspective on the notice of liability process that InPower is doing?
The Mine's a little bit different in that I'm not going into it. I can't really answer. I've had a look at it, but I just can't remember it. There's a lot to it. I think the, in essence, it's very similar in that we've got a notice of liability issue. So by sending a warning and objection notice is really what we're doing, and attached to that notice is an legal advice which explains the law and the legal liability, either in the, both in the civil and the criminal sphere. And then we also attach the medical evidence to it as well. So really it's just those three simple documents, which is enough to telcos to listen. So in essence, so it's a warning and objection notice, which is basically just a cover letter really. And in that notice, we talk about saying that we don't consent to being radiated by electromagnetic radiation. We don't consent to it being coming from your property onto my property. That's it, basically. And then we put it together and send it off.
Excellent. So the first thing you do is the notice, and that invokes your terms, right? And so you do. Yes. Do people do this as an individual, or are people coming together in groups to do this process? How does that work?
You can do it both ways. So you can, and I've had groups of, say, people have set up not-for-profit organisations and associations, and we've, for example, Wilson's Creek, we won on that level, with the Randwick City Council issue, which was the 5G TPG setup, where we had over 2,500 sites gone. We used the group issue there. With the other towers that I've been, there's other towers I've been doing where it's just individuals where that's been successful. It really, you can do it either way, yes.
So you mentioned the second one, the Randwick City Council, is that right? So is that, so you did a process at the local level with the city council, and then it had, yes, it had federal, yes, like countrywide effects, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so how it works is that in essence, you're putting them on notice. You're saying, I don't consent to this. This is technically constitutes an assault if there's intention on the other side to actually harm us. Now, the trick is that when you put them on notice, you're saying, hey, I've got a medical opinion. This thing, electromagnetic radiation, in my opinion, and it's a reasonable fear that I have because a doctor says it so, that this is going to harm. Now, there's no assault yet. It's when they then act on that and say, look, we're disregarding the medical opinion, therefore we're going to proceed and we're going to install the facility and we're going to radiate you, that's a threat. And that's a threat to assault. So it doesn't actually kick in technically until they make a positive action to start the emitting process. And they don't have to have built it yet. They just have to tell you, oh, we're going to proceed, we're not listening to your advice, or etc. Then that gives us the catalyst to take them to court.
Brilliant. So what about the scenario where the other side goes silent and they don't respond at all?
Okay, well then in my notice, or one of the notice that I've drafted up, I say this, that, and I'll just read it very quickly. If you intend to disregard my fears, concerns, and the medical advice and make it known to me by the letter or conduct that you'll proceed, regardless, then I'll treat such intentional conduct as an intentional threat to physically assault my family and myself with electromagnetic radiation. So in essence, if they're quiet and they don't feed back, you just say, well, please note, and I'll say this, please note that if you fail to respond within 14 days from the date of this letter, then it'll be deemed by your omission to respond that you intend to irradiate my land. I will therefore have no choice but to seek remedy in a court of law. So you have to put that in your letter.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You have to essentially politely issue a warning or a threat, right?
Yes. It's being very kind, saying, look, we're just letting you know about, I've got an obligation to inform you that what you're possibly doing does have some liability issues to you. I don't think you realise what you're actually doing to me, but I'm going to let you know anyway. And there's no excuse after you've got my warning notice and my objection notice, my medical certificate. If you continue, that you're really just opening yourself up for all sorts of liabilities. So what this notice actually does is it sets up everything. It sets up criminal liability. It also sets up compensation for civil issues. So let's say in the future you find that you've got a personal injury for some form, it's found that in 10 years' time that, yes, it does cause cancer. You already have the setup in place by this simple letter to protect you and to set up your liability issues right there, because they were informed that it does cause harm or it's got a potential risk, and they've completely ignored it at their own, and they've been reckless and negligent in the issue. So, and then we talk about shielding, where you can get compensation for shielding for your home. That's all in a part of the legal advice that I would give. And there's all sorts of things. So it's a very technical document, the legal advice, but what it does is it covers all scenarios. So when the emitter gets a legal opinion, which covers everything, everything literally, saying, well, you're going to be liable if you don't listen, and we're ready to go.
Wow. So there's a couple of, follow-up questions I want to ask, because this is so significant. I mean, it really makes intuitive sense here, and it's crossing over from, you're going from the private side, the notice, you're sending a notice on the private side, right? And you're able to leverage the medical system to then take it into a court, which they don't want to do, right?
Oh, and the trick with this, too, is it's not going into the Supreme Court. When I first started this, I was going to the Supreme Court, costing my client an absolute fortune, and getting nowhere. It was like spinning our wheels, and they were sort of just delaying tactics, etc. And then I realised that the trick was I could still restrain, but go into the lower courts, into the county courts, the local courts, the magistrates courts, the very simple courts, and do simple things like apply for a peace and good behaviour order. Or a restraint order. It's just simple ones. Like if your neighbour is being naughty to, being disruptive to you and is becoming a real problem, you can go and seek restraint in the magistrate's court. And that's exactly what I'm doing, is going through the simple side of it. And you'll find the telcos don't know how to deal with it, because they expect everything to go in the Supreme Courts. And here I am going through the local courts. And I'm starting to realise that KISS is the principle. Keep it simple, stupid. And it's working. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And so on the liability side now, it's really interesting, because those who have been following the electromagnetic radiation issue and the big cover-up there with respect to agencies for years know that they're, like, for example, big insurance underwriters don't cover electromagnetic radiation or wireless product harm from the actual products. Like Lloyd's of London doesn't. Yep. Swiss Re, this top 300 companies in the world, recently issued an announcement to basically say 5G, specifically 5G, is then the highest long-term risk rating. And meanwhile, it's not covered by... Okay, so tell us about this, more about the liability side.
Okay, well, you are totally right. Insurers will not insure electromagnetic radiation issues at all. And this, I guess the best way to explain it is look at it this way. I've had a really good look at the tobacco industry and the asbestosis industry and as to how it all worked and the spin doctoring that they were doing, how they weren't listening to science, the Erin Brockovich scenario where there's actual cases out there. They know that it does harm, and they're just trying to hide it and spin doctor it. And in essence, that's what I'm literally uncovering and keeping it simple, but uncovering it and providing that liability. You'll find that a good example would be the misleading terms that are currently being used. And I find that extremely frustrating. And I think it's very, very erroneous that they're doing this. You'll probably notice that in Australian legislation, and I'm pretty sure you'll find that pretty much throughout the world, that it's called non-ionising electromagnetic radiation. Now, the spin doctors then turn around and say, no, we're going to start calling it electromagnetic energy because it sounds better, okay? Oh, let's go call it that. Now they're starting to call it radio waves.
Oh, right, yeah, because people are familiar with the idea of having radio stations, transmit.
Yes, and so what that's doing is it's creating a it's almost negligent and reckless in what they're doing by dumbing it down and moving it from legislation. So you have specific definitions in the legislation. It says it's electromagnetic radiation, period. And here they are turning it around. These are the people that are supposed to be protecting us, the federal agencies that are protecting us from this, yet they're the ones that are dumbing it down. They're the ones saying that it's perfectly safe. Well, no, it's not. And doctors are telling us it's not, and there are plenty of peer-reviewed studies out there. And when you start saying, by dumbing it down this way, it's extremely misleading, and that's opening them up to liability, and they don't realise what they're doing. It's as simple as that.
Can tell us about, when you and I were talking previous to this conversation, Ray, you were telling me about what you're doing more recently, I think he has said, with public notices in newspapers and such. Like, how is that? Why are you doing that? How does it work? And just tell us about that.
That's the consent principle. It's all about whenever you see someone that wants to build town planning, for example, they'll always have to be told, you have to put in public notices and put an advert in the public notices so everybody knows. If there's a new law that's been made or changed, it's usually put in the government gazette or in public notices. And all we have to do, in essence, is put a medical opinion, a legal advice in the public notices so everybody knows. This is all about informing them that this stuff poses a real risk of harm to us. And putting that liability issue out to them, and that the precautionary principle must kick in. At the moment, they're all spruiking that there's scientific uncertainty. Well, if there's scientific uncertainty, then the precaution principle must kick in, which basically means we must err on the side of caution.
But that's really interesting, because everybody kind of, common sense, intuitively knows that we need to get back to the precautionary principle. We can no longer allow, if we want our species to continue, we can no longer allow, corporate, big, government interests to push the envelope as far as they can get away with, further and further every day, it seems like. We can no longer allow that. But by the precautionary principle and recognition of it, we the people, through processes like this, are the ones to bring that back into effect, right? Like, that system is not going to self-regulate, is it?
No, it's not. And the one thing that I've discovered in Australia, and you would say the same in the US, is that the industry self-regulates. There's nobody out there testing these towers on an independent basis to make sure that they're behaving themselves. And one thing that we're doing is we're purchasing, and we'll have it very soon, it's called a NADA 3006. And what that does is that's exactly the same. We found out that there's only three in the entire country in Australia that they're using. And you think about it, there are thousands and thousands of towers in this country, but there's only three of these devices that are used to going out there to measure. And two of them are owned by the regulatory authority. And so what we're going to do is just going to, and this, I'll tell you what, will scare the pants off the industry, because they'll realise that we're going to go out there with independent, the correct devices to measure these things. And I'll tell you what, and they've been self-regulating, they've been doing it for too long, and it's about time we went out there and tested the muscle. And I can't wait, to be quite frank with you.
That's excellent, Ray. And so just to kind of dive in and to that term, that self-regulate term, the way that I had asked the question was, they're not going to self-regulate, meaning self-correct, unless acted upon by other forces. And the other version, the other definition of self-regulate, of course, is that they are controlling the governing agencies, so they're self-regulating in that regard, but not in the regard of self-correcting in terms of doing what's right.
Well, what we're currently uncovering here, this is something I think everyone's going to, and I've been doing a lot more than just this, okay? I've been doing a lot of things in regards to, let's talk about hospitals and let's talk about schools. Who authorised to put Wi-Fi into children's wards in hospitals, pilot programs, and also put them into schools? Who said it was safe? Now, we're currently going on a campaign right now where we're sending out freedom of information request to the Department of Education, for example, and it's come back saying, well, who advised you? They're telling us that it was the health department, and then we go to the health department under FOI and they say, we never advised the state government, Department of Health in regards to that. So what we've got is we've been lied to, and there's been an issue where we've got to uncover the truth. It's as simple as that. And the only way is that people like yourself and everybody out there that wants to get out there and realise that there is some issues out there where the industry is not being regulated, it's not being policed, and it's about time that we as people did the job for them. It's all about people power does work sometimes.
Yeah, especially when they can leverage properly, like you're teaching people how to do. Which it strongly appears like you're uncovering here something hugely significant, right? Let me ask you. There's several, I think two come to mind, of individuals that you have told me about that are or have been in very high level positions within the system in Australia that are now coming over authentically, seeing the scope of risk and getting on the side of people and supporting specifically your work. Tell us about those couple of, and there's a growing number of them. Tell us about that.
Oh, it's incredible. I've got, where do I start? I've got a lot of people who are getting very concerned, from high level doctors in the medical profession, from celebrities out in the game, and also some very high profile politicians and lawyers. I guess one person I could just sort of at the top of my head would be the former speaker of the House of Representatives for the entire Australia Parliament, Federal Parliament. His name is the Honourable Peter Slipper, and he is actually on board, and he's actually taking advices as we speak in regards to electromagnetic radiation issues. And I work with him as well now. It's been great. So we've been building up that team. He's a barrister now, and he's always been a lawyer before he got into politics. But so here you have the Speaker of the House controlling both sides of Parliament, the Prime Minister and the opposition. And he's obviously no longer doing that, but now he has that oomph and that pull. He still has a lot of connections in politics, and obviously he's got a lot of credo, and he's great. And the other person I've got is a gentleman by the name of Greg Malik. Greg Malik's SC, or Senior Counsel, or as some people might know it as a QC or a Queen's Counsel. He's the current Integrity Commissioner, or Chief Commissioner for the Integrity Commission here in Tasmania. He's also the Deputy President of the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, and he's also the National President of the RSL, which is the Returned Soldiers League. He used to be the statutory member for the National Crime Authority, and he's also the President for the International Criminal Reform Committee, which is having a huge conference very soon.
At this point in the interview, the recording actually cut out, so we're going to go back to a previous and unreleased conversation I had with Ray for his closing thoughts in this part one.
And I'm going to tell you one little thing that really kicked it in for me. And Erin Brockovich is I've seen her and she, how she acted, what she did, and that's sort of the gut that I have in me at the moment. When she found the smoking gun, well, I found it in Australia. There was the chief medical officer for Telstra was a gentleman called Dr. Bruce Hocking, and Dr. Bruce Hocking did a study around telecommunications tower in Sydney, and he found a high incidence of cancer clusters for childhood leukemia in that area. In two studies, not one, but two. He then got it peer-reviewed, published in the Australian Medical Journal, and guess what? He was sacked, okay? And then I realised that the industry, everybody knows. And the latency periods that you see for swinomas, etc., gliomas and brain cancers, the whole bit. You know, there's a latency period of 40 years. there's the issue with sperm, you know, being the DNA changes, and you know, everybody's libido is going there. There's all sorts of issues. And one thing that I, what seems to make sense to everybody with in regards to electromagnetic radiation, I've found, is everybody's noticing they're not getting enough sleep because of their melatonin levels are decreasing, and because the electromagnetic radiation is almost as if the sun is in your room 24 hours a day. When I explain the melatonin issue to them, it makes everybody, oh, you're right. I have noticed a big decline in my sleep patterns, and it's getting worse. I'm really, really worried. And I didn't think I'd ever get like this, you know, 6 years ago when I look back to who I am today. It's a big concern.